you're listening to Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson dig deeply. We probe the movies that affect us in some way, positive or negative. Be warned, there are spoilers coming. So sit back, get comfortable as we dig in and probe the movies, but not in a creepy way. So are you about ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, well, welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2004 movie Night Watch, which the copy I saw was the dub version. I think you can see it in its original Russian with subtitles, but the dubbing is kind of fine. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I watched it with subtitles, but it had English voiceover in the at the very beginning and at the very end, which is kind of weird with an accent. And so that was kind of funny.
Like a bad Russian accent? Or just a Russian accent?
Just a Russian accent. Sounded authentic to me, but, you know, I don't really know any better.
Now, had you seen this movie before?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched it when it first came out on video. So, a couple houses ago of mine, I watched that.
Have you seen the other movie or read any of the books?
I have not. The other movie wasn't out when I watched it, and then it just kind of fell off my radar. But after I finished it the first time, I really wanted to see the second one. Just never got around to it.
Yeah, well, it's there are now four books. It's Night Watch, and then Day Watch, and then Twilight Watch, and Last Watch.
And have you read the books?
I have the books. I have read most of Night Watch, which is funny because the movie Night Watch is only like a third of the actual book. It's just one segment of the story. So I'm interested in the rest of it. But again, like many other things, I'm trying to fold it in among other things I'm doing. Actually, to take a slight tangent off, I'm reading a book called The Disaster Artist, about Tommy Wiseau in the movie The Room.
Oh, yes. That's supposed to be the worst movie ever made, right?
It's supposed to be. I haven't seen it. I've only seen clips of it. But I think his name is Gregory Sestero, and an author named Tom Bissell wrote it together, and Gregory Sestero narrates the Audible version, and he does the Tommy Wiseau accent. And it's actually pretty great, although, you know, you feel sort of sad for this guy who is clearly, he's got some clear mental problems. And how deep they are, who knows, but he is delusional about his own abilities, that's for sure. In what maybe is a charming way, depending on, you know, I don't know. But yeah, Greg Sestero played Mark in the movie, and the movie is punctuated by almost every scene, somebody comes in and says, "Oh, hi, Mark." So much so that you can see the supercuts, "Hi, Mark," version of the movie.
That sounds like a brilliant cinema.
Yeah, the movie, the book rather, is very interesting. So, but back to Night Watch. Night Watch, I think, is a even rewatching it again, and now I feel burned by the Nightbreed effect. I love rewatching it too. I thought it had everything I remember from it and more.
Yeah, I had only remembered the very basic story beats, so I experienced all the great stuff again. Felt like pretty freshly.
Yeah, and do we just want to head into the plot itself, or thoughts on the movie as a whole?
Have you seen anything else that this director has made?
No. What else is there? I don't even know if there was stuff.
He directed Wanted. Did you see that one?
The Angelina Jolie vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have not seen it, no.
I saw a lot of similar styles in that movie as in this movie. He also did Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh, get
which
out.
Was terrible.
Well, that's, yeah. I think I'm sure I got the disc from Netflix, but I don't remember. I don't know if it was just slow in the beginning or what the problem was, but there was some reason why it was like, okay, next.
Yeah, good choice.
Well, but did you like this movie?
Nightwatch?
Yeah.
Yes, very much.
Yeah, me too. There's so much cool stuff about it. This, I didn't look into the budget of this movie, but it had some great special effects that still, they still work.
Yeah, he did a really good job. The budget can't have been very high, but he did a really good job making really creepy effects very subtly. So he definitely got a lot of bang for the buck for his effects.
Well, and the whole thing is a fantasy story. I mean, it opens in medieval times, and we're introduced, by the way, all plot summaries are provided by Wikipedia. Wikipedia! It's mostly right. You're introduced to the fact that there are humans with special powers called the Others, and there are two camps of Others, the Forces of Light and the Forces of Darkness. And in the beginning, there's this whole medieval battle scene between the two sides, which I happen to love. And the fact that you have a dog with full plate armor on and a witch in chains fighting for the good side kind of tells you how this battle is going to go.
Well, they actually spend most of the movie avoiding good and evil. They do touch on it, but they talk mostly about light and dark.
Well, you're right about that. Yeah, it is light and dark. Although, clearly, the Lord of the Light, Gesser, is more of a humanitarian force, and the Lord of the Darkness is Zavulon, and he's more of a sinister character.
Yes.
At least in this part of the story. So, you have this battle between two forces, the light forces, which are in, like, sort of plate armor, and the dark forces, which are more of a barbarian horde kind of group, and they're fighting on this big bridge. And I love the insects and the birds in this movie. Because the insects and the birds, they set the tone and the like omens in the movie in such a great way.
Very creatively used. And in a way that you notice, but it's not in your face all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't stop and say, hey, look at the birds. And yeah, you're right. You totally notice. Anyway, so in this battle, both sides are evenly matched, and so there can be no winner. So while Zavulon, the Lord of the Darkness, seems to enjoy the battle, Gesser, the Lord of Light, knows it's not gonna end well, so decides to call a truce between the dark and the light. And in order to make sure that the truce is maintained, there is Nightwatch, which are the Forces of Light people keeping an eye on the Forces of Dark people, and then there's Daywatch, who do the opposite. And this movie is obviously concerned with the Nightwatch.
Right, and it's kind of an interesting switch. It sort of upends what you would think would be happening with the Forces of Light and the Forces of Dark, because since they're the Watch, the Forces of Light actually spend all of their time at night, because they're watching the Dark Others. And in just a couple brief scenes, then you see that their counterparts, the Day Watch, the Dark Others, spend all of their time in the day.
And because there's a lot of do you know, is any of this mythology like folklore, or is it just made out of whole cloth? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea.
Yeah, me either. I guess it'd be nice to know, but I didn't take the time, so I apologize.
I just jumped in. I went along for the ride at the world building and just assumed it was all contained within the story of the movie.
Oh, no, me too. And it worked. It does. It gives you, there's actually two different explanations of what's going on in a way that I thought was very skillfully done. Like, the beginning, like, medieval battle scene isn't even very long, but it gives you the idea that this is a big event, and everything is kind of hinged on this tension between light and dark.
Yeah, it's, even though it's a singular location, it's presented in a way that makes you feel like the fate of the world is in the balance.
Yeah, exactly. Also, it gives you a feeling of this is like a, it's potentially a much bigger, like, mythology than even what they're giving. Like, there's even more to it they could add to it.
Right, because one of the things I love about this movie and about movies that respect their audience in general is that it doesn't spend hardly any time explaining the details. It sort of trusts you to follow along and figure out the nuances of this world and how it's different than ours. So that you, even if it doesn't explain every single thing about what's going on, you get the uncomfortable sense that even though it looks mostly like our world, it is slightly different, and things are different, and the rules are a little different. So you're just along for the ride, and it's paced well enough that it only takes the time to stop and explain really important stuff. It trusts you to stay with it for the less important stuff.
And it's, well, another thing I like about this movie is that there's this whole, you know, two camps, the light and the dark, but they are the others, that most people have no idea that this is going on, at least for the most part, at least the people who are involved in it. All the others seem to know the rules or are told the rules, but regular people are just living their lives oblivious, or seemingly oblivious to this. Although there's a certain, I was curious, like the decor in this movie, in people's apartments, I thought, well, how much of this is actual, you know, taken from Russian life, and how much of this is just like fantasy, like world building in the, as a conceit of the movie? Because there's some weird choices that were made in set design in this movie, but we'll get to that as we go along.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so you got this ancient thing that's going on. And then you flash forward to present day, and we're in Russia.
And, almost present day.
Well, yeah, almost, you're right. And, 12 years prior to present day. And we have, I guess it's pretty much defined. It's like 80s time, right? They pretty much define it in the 80s, and then the movie picks up in the 90s. But, anyway, we've got this man named Anton, and I thought he looked a lot like Dave Davies of the Kinks. He had kind of that hairstyle sort of thing going.
Yeah, it was very, very obvious. Obviously made up to not look like he was going to look for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, well, that's where we meet our hero, sort of, Anton. And he visits a witch named Daria and asks her to cast a spell to return his wife to him. His wife is cheating on him. So Daria has news for Anton, says that, oh yeah, your wife is pregnant by another man, and that if she gives birth, this will bond her permanently to this other guy. So if he wants his wife to return, then she must miscarry, and Daria will do it, but he has to accept responsibility for this miscarriage. And he's like, okay, yeah, whatever. So Daria, the witch, mixes up a drink, It's this quick cut to the wife that is now under the influence of the spell, tells the guy they have to split up, and then as Daria starts to recite this incantation to induce a miscarriage, she starts clutching her belly, the wife, on this boat that they're on, and just as the incantation is about to be completed, two figures become visible in the room, and then a third appears and shapeshifts into a tiger. This is the Night Watch team, and they're restraining Daria, preventing her from completing her spell, in kind of a clever action scene. But what they don't anticipate happening is that Anton is able to see them, and that's how we find out that Anton is also an other.
That's because all of the action is happening in the gloom, right?
Yeah, in the gloom. A lot of the action's happening in the gloom. A lot of the cool special effects are in the gloom. And the gloom, by the way, in the book, is called the Twilight. So just, that's why the third book is called Twilight Watch. And I think, if I remember correctly, there's a video game that I bought based on this, based on Night Watch, that it was broken. It was like, had bugs, so they released it with so many bugs in it that it wouldn't actually work at all on the computer I was using it with. But he referred to it as the Gloom, which is weird too, but anyway. Yeah, there's this whole separate place they can shift into for a brief period of time.
It's sort of like a different layer of reality.
Yes, and they can see different things and experience different things in that setting. I remember the video game had very specific things that you could do and you can't do while you were in that setting.
Yeah, but it's still in the same physical location.
Exactly. Yeah, you're kind of shifting into a different, yeah, like layer. You're right. That's the best way to describe it. Also, there's a lot of the action in the gloom has this slow motion type action, but it's not slow. It's like sped up slow motion, if that makes any sense. So it's very stylistic.
Yeah, it's like different paces of motion for different things all at once. Like maybe there could be a smoke effect that's really slow while the people are moving fast.
And this seems like there's certain physics laws that don't apply in the gloom. Plus the whole shape-shifting into two different animals is a weird thing. But they don't really even go into that too much, and that actually works out really well. I agree with you there. The fact that they don't explain a lot helps this movie immensely. Then we've met the Night Watch team, and we see that Anton is another. Then we fast forward 12 years. And of course, 12 it turns out to be important in this case. There's some flaws.
What I also loved about the reveal that Anton was another was that the Night Watch team kind of called out that he's another, but he's got really shitty powers. I think they actually say something like, "Oh, great, another asshole who has visions of the future."
Oh yeah, that's true. Because like he can't shapeshift into an animal. He gets weird visions of the future.
And they are not impressed.
Yeah, no. And also, another rule about the others is you are, once you discover that you're an other, or somebody points out you're an other or something, you have to choose between light and dark. The other side is not allowed to choose for you. That's one of the main rules. They can't influence a person's choice to pick which side.
But you have to pick.
But you do have to pick, yes. So 12 years pass now, and now Anton, I think of him like as Christopher from The Sopranos now, that he's got a haircut. He is now a member of the Night Watch. And he's working with this team, who we've already met 12 years earlier. And he's tasked to find this vampire. And in order to see or get a bead on this vampire, he has to drink blood to become like a vampire himself temporarily in order to hear the same call that the vampire is calling out to this victim.
Right. And I think he's supposed to be drinking pig's blood, but he's out of it at his apartment. So he goes to his neighbor's butcher shop to get a new swig of pig's blood. But your take on that was they fed him human blood, right?
Yes, yes. And his neighbor, Kostya, who is his neighbor about his age, roughly, maybe a little younger, actually, and then Kostya's father, who's the butcher, they're both vampires. So they are dark others. But that doesn't seem to bother Anton. It's just, you know, they're neighbors, that's fine, it's not a big deal, as long as everybody obeys the rules. But I thought the music intro that you get at the butcher shop or the market where the butcher is at, it's fantastic. Some of the music in this movie is great.
Oh, the music was great. The visuals were great. It was so uncomfortably dirty.
Oh, yeah. And there was one thing that actually like did a little freeze frame on, thinking, what is that animal that they've got butchered in the, it's not in the back, it's in actually the front of the little butcher market, the counter space. And it is so weird looking. I'm like, that is something monstrous.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't freeze frame anything, but I'm assuming there's stuff like that all over the movie where it's just maybe in the background or slightly out of focus, but weird. So maybe it doesn't register, you know, in the forefront of your mind about what you're seeing, but it's just enough to make you uncomfortable and to feel that something's off.
Well, and there's a lot, like, that's, I wonder about the budget again, because there's a certain amount of money they spend on special effects, because they did a great job with the special effects, the computer effects, but there's a lot of just set dressing things that showed really attention to detail that I thought was pretty great. Like the utility truck that they drive, we'll get into that in a second, but it's got those little like dingley ball things, like which you would imagine in some sort of foreign taxi cabs.
Mm-hmm.
And that may just be what you do, how you decorate a truck if you're in Eastern Europe someplace, but I thought was like, that kind of touch is perfect.
Yeah, they did really good. They showed a lot of restraint when they did use special effects. Like when Anton was drinking the blood, you just saw a couple flashes on his face where his face pulsed with some red lines. So it was really subtle, but it was still enough to make you aware that something important and fantastic was happening to him with his blood.
And you got the idea, because all of a sudden you saw flashes of like an entire like Venus system.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of seeing like a person's body, you just saw their veins just for a flash. And so, yeah, so you totally, in just a couple of frames, you already get the feel of what's going on. Beautiful. Absolutely stunning to look at how beautiful this movie is. But there are some plot problems, or some conventions that we'll get into in just a second. Like, the overall story is interesting. Anyway, so he now has blood in him, so he can now get more in tune with the vampires. And although he still can't see vampires, so we get into that a little bit later. But the person who is being called by this vampire that he's trying to hunt is a 12-year-old boy named Jaeger, who hears this call by the vampire that intends to feed on him. So Anton has to track Jaeger to get to the vampire in question. And let's see, the closer he gets to Jaeger, his ability to hear the call becomes better because of the blood he drank. And on his way to this whole thing, he happens to see this blonde woman with her hair flying around in the subway. And he thinks she's a vampire, so he pulls out one of the many gadgets these folks have, which is a flashlight, where he can shine ultraviolet light to see if she's a real vampire. She's not a vampire, but she is under some sort of curse. He knows this. But he's got other fish to fry. He notices this. I love the scene in the subway, because he's sort of pushing and shoving, trying to get to this girl and trying to get to the vampires. And he's actually acting kind of like a dick on the subway. And so, like, this little Russian lady has a little conversation with them. It's very funny.
Well, also, when he sees her, the blonde woman, he has a terrifying vision of the future, of Armageddon, and he starts screaming like a lunatic.
Yes, that's true. That's why he's acting like an ass on the subway, is because he is screaming like a lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the music that's happening during these visions and stuff, fantastic. So he ends up tracking down these vampires, and there are two of them. They're about to feed on Jaeger, this 12-year-old boy, and there's this fight scene, and Anton can only see the vampires through a mirror, and he tries to shine his flashlight on the male vampire, who's his target, but he misses and hits the female instead, injures her.
He can't see them because they're hanging out in the gloom, right?
That may be. Although, the fact that he can see them in the mirror, I don't understand. Yeah, I guess that would be... Yeah, I don't understand that part of it. It's a weird convention because normally you couldn't see a vampire in a mirror. So yeah, I guess they are hanging out in the gloom, and he, somehow through the mirror he can see them in the gloom.
It's not explained, but...
It works. Yeah, it seems like they're playing by their own rules, but they seem to be following the rules, so that works.
Mm-hmm.
And Anton, you know, it shows that Anton is not like a... he's not Blade. He's not a super good fighter. He doesn't have any super special, like, extra special skills. He's just sort of mediocre at what he does, but he's getting the job done. Barely.
Yeah, he's really... I couldn't figure out from his first action scene if he was suicidal or not, because he plunged headlong into trouble without really any regard for himself. But he certainly didn't have much ability to defend himself.
Was he less fearful because A, he thought he had the rest of the team backing him up, or B, he didn't think that the people would violate the... Or he was just... He's basically the cop trying to keep this the vampires from getting
violating the truce.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's... but again, he's... he's... The whole Night Watch team, to me, just struck me as they were Ghostbusters. They're all cracking wise, and they've got their tricked out, like, light and power utility truck with the flames that come out the back. And they've got the flashlights that have special lens or special, like crystals that shine out different light to have different effects. And evidently the headlights on the truck also do this sort of thing.
Right. And so they actually end up killing the male vampire.
Which is a problem. It violates the agreement.
As it turns out, it wasn't like they murdered him. I mean, it was a fight gone badly.
Yeah, you'd think it was self-defense, but evidently they treat it as a murder. Although, again, this whole movie is from the perspective of the Night Watch, so what Day Watch members you see are few and far between. You actually see much more of Zebulon, the Lord of Darkness, than you do the actual Day Watch team.
Right.
And again, partly because all the Night Watch happens at night, and the Day Watch would theoretically happen in the daytime. So, anyway, Anton, who gets his ass handed to him in this fight, is healed.
He almost dies.
Yeah. And he is healed by Gesser, he's a weird Santa Claus-y kind of guy. I mean, maybe Santa Claus is probably the wrong character to pick, but he seems like almost like a kindly old bumbling kind of man compared to...
Yeah. Yeah, I got like, he's like an old boss who is not very effective, but is relatively friendly. So you kind of put up with him.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe him. Where Zebulon is more, he's A, much more modern. He plays with the PlayStation.
Okay, that was an actual question I had for you. That was Zebulon, right? Playing the game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things. Zebulon is playing this PlayStation game. I believe it was a PlayStation, right?
Yeah, PlayStation 2?
Yeah, so he's playing this PlayStation game where he himself is a character. It turns out so is Anton, and spoiler, so is Jaeger, in this little game that you only see the last bit of.
Right.
So it's a strange world these folks live in.
I don't want to say, like, all old Russian dudes look the same, but I really had trouble telling who was who, especially in a setting like that where there's no context for having medieval Zebulon all of a sudden playing a video game and ordering around pop singers to do his bidding.
Yeah. Well, pretty much you could tell Zebulon because he was the guy that smoked black Russian cigarettes. And had more of a squinty face. But yeah, you're right. I mean, these two old Russian guys. It would have been easier to recognize them if, say, Zebulon was played by Idris Elba or something.
Yes.
Yeah, it would
much
not...
Maybe.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a great movie, but it would be easier to tell them apart. So Anton is healed by Gesser, and Gesser tells him, look, you could have solved this a lot better if you went into the gloom, you know, like presumably we have told you about in this last 12 years. But this gives you an opportunity gives him an opportunity to at least discuss that the gloom exists.
I never really understood why Anton didn't want to go into the gloom.
Yeah, I don't quite get it either. There, I'm sure there is a reason for it, but it's not really explained in the movie. So then we get to one of the cheesier aspects of the movie. It's where we learn about the woman on the subway and how we get that information. The scene where Anton has been healed, sort of, but then Gesser takes some tape and tapes one eye closed and then takes a belt or something and like basically straps their head together so they're eyeball to eyeball, and that way he can see the same thing that Anton sees.
Yes. Yeah. That is exactly what happened.
That's a weird touch. Not entirely, I guess it wasn't expected, that's for sure. I just thought this is strange.
My favorite part of that was after Anton decides he's healed enough to go back to work, it takes him way too long to take the tape off his eye.
Well, yeah.
Like I had trouble concentrating on what they were actually talking about because I just kept thinking, why aren't you taking the damn tape off your eye? That was really uncomfortable.
Well, and here's where you get a piece of exposition that I love. Because it's another story element to this, where he tells you another part of the mythology that they're in, but he does it by flip book. I kind of like that. But
it was great. I mean, it was this little cartoon right in the middle of this weird, dark, gritty fantasy movie.
Yeah, well, and as you, the first time you see Gesser, that he's basically waiting for Anton to come back and heal him, he's actually has a pen, and he's like, it looks like he's sort of doodling this lady, but then when you get to the animation part of it, it looks like he's done this whole flip book with his lady. It's unclear how much he already knows in advance, but he's telling Anton what the deal is, and so we have this legend, and the legend is about a virgin who is cursed so that the people and animals around her die or get really sick, and that she's accompanied by a vortex of damnation. So
it sounds even more menacing than a list of judgment.
It does, doesn't it? It totally sounds. I mean, although I'm more scared of Brother Jay's list of judgment, or just his judgment in general, than damnation. But then again, you know, that's again how we believe. However, if he was surrounded by a vortex of judgment, that'd be even worse. Plus, it would give him a bad hair day. So apparently, the virgin who's now reborn, this blonde lady is the virgin with the vortex of damnation, and they have to find the person that cursed her, because this is where we tell the story that the fact that there are others and the light and the dark was brought about by one regular person cursing another regular person. Curses. This thing is all about curses. So they have to find the person that cursed her. And it's all very apocalyptic. It's really like Book of Revelation sort of stuff. And so they...
I think it's revealed later. I think it's supposed to be, you know, a bit of a reveal. But they either have to find the person who cursed her to remove the curse, or they have to kill her before the vortex opens.
And apparently bad things will happen. Like, they're not supposed to be killing her, too.
Right.
But anyway, this is where Gesser gives Anton an assistant. The assistant's name is Olga. Olga is a taxidermied owl. Anton suggests that he doesn't need a stuffed owl. And then Gesser throws the stuffed owl out of the window. And then she turns into a living owl and flies away. She then shows up at Anton's apartment later. And there's this bit of, like, comedy business where
that was probably the best jump scare of the whole movie.
Oh yeah. This is a disturbing shape-shifting, by the way, because she turns into a woman. But shape-shifting is a violent, ugly business.
Yes.
it requires cleanup at the end of it. So this the person that shapeshifted from a tiger, I can't even imagine what that was like in the hallway.
Well, maybe shapeshifting to the tiger was fine, but shapeshifting back was probably unpleasant.
Ah, there you go. That could be.
Yeah, it's not even. It's so odd and uncomfortable because she, while it's happening, she keeps yelling at him to not look at her. So you only see flashes and, you know, little brief close-ups here and there of what's happening.
And the flashes that you see makes just as well that they don't look at you. You're happy that he doesn't want to look at her.
Right.
Because you get the feeling that this is, again, this is violent and ugly and unpleasant. And yet she's a perfectly personable woman when she transforms. She actually cracks wise, too.
Yeah, it turns out the whole owl taxidermy thing was a punishment.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get, like, a full explanation of that. She just mentions that she did something bad.
Yeah, no, that was it. Yeah. Anton commented that he'd never heard of such a severe punishment, and she responded with something like, he'd never heard of these types of crimes.
Yeah, so she's dark and mysterious too. Yeah, again, you're right. This good and bad thing, light and dark, does not necessarily mean good and bad. There seem to be players on both sides. Again, that's why I'm interested in revisiting the second movie and actually the books, because I'm curious where this is all going to end up. Although, again, it gets a little familiar toward the end. Shall we say? So. During this whole thing, he has to find some clothing for her. And evidently his clothes are provided by the Night Watch, because he only has a couple of outfits, and they're all, like, pre-labeled for him in his closet. So he doesn't have any women's clothing. So he goes and asks his neighbor, Kostya, the vampire, if he has any women's clothing. Turns out, he does. His mom's clothing.
Also, turns out he's not happy with Anton.
Oh, no, because a word on the street is that Anton killed that vampire. And not only does it break the law or whatever, but it's also offensive because he killed a vampire and Kostya is a vampire. So, you know, you kill one, you kill them all, or that they all, they're all connected somehow.
Yeah, Kostya tells him that when he killed the other vampire, all of the dark others felt it.
Now it's personal. So, Anton and Olga still have to go track down Jaeger, because we have this female vampire that was wounded, but not killed, during the whole fight with the mirror scene. And when they go into Jaeger's home, they enter the gloom, and turns out Jaeger is hiding there in the gloom. And the gloom is about to consume him, because apparently you can't go into the gloom for very long. But Anton then performs a blood sacrifice long enough for Jaeger to escape.
Well, they weren't looking for Jaeger because they were trying to get the other vampire?
That's my understanding.
Because that was the other part of the virgin story, was that the appearance of the cursed virgin would also coincide with the appearance of this super powerful other who was going to tilt the balance to either the light or the dark, depending on which side he chose.
Oh, that's true. Yes, I left that out of the explanation. You're absolutely right. So there's this super other that's coming. And now, did they think that the female vampire could be the super other, or how was she related to the story?
I don't know. At this point, I was just along for the ride.
Oh, no, me too. And actually, I'd put that once we found out Jaeger is an other, I got the sense that the others were just a bit like Bruce Willis in Unbreakable. Everybody's got something going on, but not even they really know what's going on, you know, what they can do yet. So this is where we get a little bit of melodrama, because emerging from the gloom, Anton sees a photograph of Jaeger and his mother, who is... dun-dun-dun-dun... Anton's ex-wife. So Jaeger is then theoretically the child of the ex-wife's lover.
Right, and yeah. But Jaeger is the kid that he almost killed with black magic.
Exactly. So, anyway, apparently Anton gets called away because Anton, even though he has his powers are dubious, he's a very important part of this group because he keeps being yanked away to go and be the main lead, the head of the expedition. Because now the heat is on looking for this the virgin girl, and Tiger and Bear come to hang out with Jaeger. So Anton and Olga, they go to some sort of, Wikipedia calls it a command and control center set up near the apartment of Svetlana, the cursed woman of the subway train. Apparently, they set up in this apartment where all of the residents of the apartment are just sort of frozen there until they're done.
Right. Not seemingly a not very nice thing to do for the light, who are sensibly supposed to be the good.
Yeah, they play by their own rules. Again, they're Ghostbusters. They break traffic laws and everything. They got their own thing. I do like, by the way, I love the fact that their headquarters is like the light and power company in Moscow. I mean, I just think that's kind of fun. This is where things get, again, a little bit of melodrama, a little bit of weird, questionable writing as far as I was concerned. Because right now we have it all set up where the vortex is getting all out of control, or it's like ramping up to open up. And there's all these birds. Like I said, birds play a big role in like setting the tone of what's going on. And so these birds are just showing you the vortex that is essentially invisible, except for the birds. And then you have this plane that's flying overhead that is suddenly in danger because the plane is flying through the vortex. And I like the fact that one of the little bolts from the wing, I think, pops off and ends up landing in Svetlana's coffee.
But, oh, that was a fantastic tracking shot.
And it's great because she just takes it in stride, like, oh, this shit is happening to me all the time. And takes the bolt out and finishes her coffee. So, at this point, Anton is now looking through the computer to find out more of Svetlana's connections, to find out who cursed her. And in this investigation, he stumbles upon the fact that Daria had, the witch, had lied to Anton originally, and the boy he had asked to miscarry was in fact his son, not the son of his wife's lover. So, Jaeger is Anton's son.
Which I assume surprised nobody except Anton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It certainly didn't. I mean, I think you could probably see that coming as soon as they said that it has gone 12 years in the future and now you have a 12-year-old boy as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It didn't seem like it was not the deftest hand in writing this part of it. Also, so Anton can't find the solution to who cursed Svetlana, so he goes and just confronts her. And she then reveals that she cursed herself.
I actually love this. They got to this part in the story, they're like, ah, man, we need to wrap up this virgin thing so we can get back to the kid. She cursed herself. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, what, Addy? So she's an other. She didn't know it, but apparently when you curse yourself, if you're an other, you can actually have the curse really affect you as a real curse. So as soon as this is revealed that I cursed myself, we'll take it back. Okay. And then boom, the vortex disappears because she took her curse. She took it back. You think this whole thing could have been handled with a letter? Could have mailed her a letter saying, hey, take it back. It gets everybody in the same physical location for the final scene of the movie, which is very important.
Right.
And also, this is where, Svetlana's apartment, what is up with the forest wallpaper?
You mean other than a callback to medieval times?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's like, what? Does this really exist, or is this just completely, this is a whole fantasy story, you gotta, you know, accept everything, which is, again, it was fine. I was happy to be along for the ride of this movie. I like this movie a lot. But again, the ending. So Jaeger.
There were some great things about the ending.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, maybe I should let you describe it. Jaeger, by the way, has disappeared from Tiger and Bear, and is being lured by the vampire who has now lured him up to the roof of this building. And it's his roof, right? Is this Jaeger's roof?
Yes.
Okay. So all of a sudden we have Jaeger up on top of the roof with this female vampire who the Daywatch had contacted her to kind of soup her up, like set her on that path to finding the kid. So you get your first glimpse of like the sexy chick Daywatch lady. Oh, before you'd only seen this kind of skanky hip hop Daywatch guy.
Tracksuit guy,
yes. So tracksuit guy and pop singer girl reveal themselves to be part of the Daywatch. Anyway, it all leads up to this this final confrontation on top of the the building, including Zavulon and Anton and Jaeger, and then pretty much everybody else in the cast is watching.
Right, but before Zavulon showed up, there's actually a little bit of a heartbreaking scene with the female vampire where she sort of drives home the point that the Night Watch, the Light Others, even though supposedly they're on the side of good, they're not such great people all the time. Because they sort of just gloss over it in the beginning of the movie. She was made a vampire by her, the vampire that Anton killed. He loved her, so he actually got a license from the Night Watch to turn her into a vampire. So he did it legally. And it was pretty sad that, you know, when she's holding Jaeger hostage and talking to Anton, she just tells him that she wants to become human again and doesn't understand why they let the vampire eat her like food.
It is. I mean, she is a victim in the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. But everybody followed the rules. They got a permit, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Which doesn't make you feel very good about the Night Watch.
Well, no, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing, is that you're right. From the very beginning, light and dark do not mean good and bad. There's some nefarious crap going on behind the scenes. Also, I like the fact that Zavulon, he has foreseen this all through the power of PlayStation, that he's going to have this confrontation. He's been trying to win this PlayStation game against Anton, and part of it is his character reaches behind his head and pulls out a sword made of his own vertebrae.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome, but it was a little strange. And in the game, he keeps losing. Anton keeps winning, but he is determined to win this fight. And he's so eager for the fight, he gets to the bottom of the building, and things are going at such a pace that he cannot wait for the elevator to go up on its natural course. Or he's just so angry, which is kind of what I thought. He does this whole Willy Wonka elevator action thing, where he does a little Kurt Russell like sort of scream, and the elevator just speeds up like crazy and crashes out on top of the building, so he gets there faster.
I never got the sense at any point that he was angry. I felt like he was always in control. But he's essentially the Joker, right? I mean, up this elaborate scheme.
Well, yeah, and he's in it. I mean, from the very beginning of the medieval scene, you could tell he's in it for the fight. He's in it for the bloodshed.
Right.
Yeah, he likes to do bad things. Spiders in the armor, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
At some point, we figure out that Jaeger is the great other, the one who will tip the balance, depending on which side he chooses. I don't remember how that's revealed, but
I knew watching it this time, I knew from watching it previously. So it was just always in the back of my mind. But, you know, when trying to think about the plot of the movie, I have no idea when that is actually revealed.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, except that that seems to be where everything is headed. Once you find out that Svetlana is not the the major other, and, I mean, there, I guess there could be a time where you could think that Anton is the other, but then he's already made his choice, so that can't be him.
Right, yeah, no, there's a certain economy of characters which doesn't allow you to ever think that it's going to be anybody but Jaeger.
Yeah. And actually, you know, okay, other than the fact that Jaeger is Anakin Skywalker in this whole thing, although he's yet to kill any younglings, that comes later, I'm sure. But...
Anakin, that reminds me of some housekeeping I did have.
Okay. So, the end of the movie is, of course, Zabulon is fighting against Anton, and Anton is trying to stab Zabulon, and Zabulon sidesteps... just as Jaeger runs up to both of them, and because Jaeger and Anton have a little connection, and I think Jaeger is trying to save Anton, but at the last minute, it appears that Anton is trying to stab Jaeger, and Zabulon, it stopped Anton from doing that, and Jaeger is like, "Hey, were you trying to stab me?" And Anton's like, "No, I wouldn't stab you, kid." And then Zavulon's assistant, of course, reads the personnel file out loud, where it's revealed that Anton tried to have Jaeger killed in utero.
Wait, he was trying to stab Jaeger, right?
It says in the summary here, and I got the idea that he wasn't. He was trying to stab Zabulon, but I don't know. I'll have to go look at it again.
I thought he. Yeah, My reading of the scene was that he thought he was going to lose his battle with Zebulon, which would leave Jaeger in his clutches and lead to the eventual victory of the Dark Others. And evil would prevail, so as to prevent that, he was going to kill Jaeger.
And sacrifice himself at the same time?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's even darker.
Maybe that was just me adding melodrama to it, or it wasn't there.
It's even darker that way. But yeah, once Jaeger finds out that Anton tried to have him killed even before he was born, that pushes Jaeger over the edge. And dun-dun-dun, we're already led into the sequel at that point.
Yeah, so the movie ends with Jaeger, the Great Other, choosing Dark because it turns out he thinks Anton's kind of a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And so Zabulon gets his way without really having to kill Anton or anybody else.
Right, which somehow was Zebulon's plan all along. So.
Yes, because he is the Emperor.
Right. I think that's a perfectly satisfactory ending.
Like, oh, yeah.
There never was a sequel. It's a pretty dark ending, you know. You don't expect the light to lose.
No, and it's, I mean, I thought, again, it was... you know, they have this fantasy world, so, you know, you're not too, or I wasn't too hung up on some of the cheesiness. I mean, these are just sort of fantasy tropes, and it worked out with the story, and the whole thing was presented in such a beautiful, pleasing way to watch that I had no problems with this movie. I mean, the sort of, like, allusions to other stories was just fine. You know, the whole thing is a myth or a folk tale, then you should know how it's going to end up.
Yeah, it really reminded me of another one of those times when I watched the movie when I was way too young with you. Halloween 3?
Yes. Yes.
I remember very clearly, I don't remember anything about the movie other than it ended, and I was like, wait, I don't understand. And you actually had to explain to me, like, no, that's what's awesome. The bad guys win.
Oh, not
the
only
whole,
that.
The whole
world gonna end. Is going to end, yes. Yeah.
I was like that can't be an ending.
You know, we I don't know if at some point we want to watch that movie, because that movie has some issues with it, some things that make it quite fun and also really cheesy to watch. But my introduction to that movie and the whole Halloween series, because, you know, like, there was no one who was going to take me to those movies inappropriately young, and they weren't on, let's see, I didn't see them either. We didn't have the video stores available to us at that point, and they weren't on, like, whatever our version of cable would have been. But the first Halloween, I'd heard from people at school or whatever about seeing the Halloween movies, but the only thing I could get my hands on was the novelization of the movie Halloween 3, which has nothing to do with the rest of the Halloween series at all. But I love that book, because the book even spells it out even more clearly at the end. Everybody dies. I loved it. It's not even like apocalyptic in the fact that you like there's a post-apocalyptic world. No, everybody dies.
Yep, I just remember the glee you took at sort of destroying that last bit of innocence I had, that good will always triumph over evil.
No, I didn't mean to destroy your innocence, but I do take glee in the end of that movie. Like, you know, spoilers.
That reminded me of, I forget which podcast it was, but you and Jason were talking about how I keep bringing up that I was too young to watch some of these movies. And I just want to make clear, I'm not complaining.
I bring it up because it amuses me to do so.
Yeah.
Today we were talking about the movie Clue, and we got off on a tangent. Actually, I think it's going to appear in the podcast. We got off after the movie Clue. We talked to Jason, saw the movie Jobs with Ashton Kutcher as Steve Jobs.
Wow.
And he was looking forward to it so much because he had read the book, and apparently the book is fantastic. And he was actually like sort of saying, hey, we can always, you know, it's available on Amazon Prime or whatever. Or no, it was on Netflix streaming. He's like, hey, you know, if we could talk about this movie next week after we're done with Clue. And I said, okay, well, just let me know. Well, he turns out he did not like this movie at all, at all, at all, at all, because it just took out part of the story. I'll let you hear the episode, how it turns out. But I was trying to come up with a quick analogy. And I'm like, well, I know that my youngest brother doesn't like analogous thought, but I'm going to try to take a stab at it. Turns out it was a horrible analogy anyway. It didn't even really work very well. But again, I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with it. It just amuses me to that we have recurring themes in the discussions. And yeah, I expose you to a lot of inappropriate movies, but that's just what older brothers do, at least in our family, evidently.
No, it was great.
Yeah, well, anyway, sometime we might have to talk about Halloween 3, although it's got some serious problems with it. It's such a nostalgia fest.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just saying, it has nothing to do at all with the rest of the series. Like, there's a whole reason why they used it, but it didn't turn out the way they wanted. They were originally going to have, after the Halloween 2, they were going to start off with Halloween being sort of like the name attached to like an anthology sort of series, where it was just, they released it on Halloween, but it could be any kind of story and it wasn't necessarily connecting with any other story.
That's probably a much more interesting way to go.
Yeah, well, it didn't work though, so they decided to go back to the wood. Yeah, and it never got back to the beauty of the first two movies, which, you know, had their problems too, but at least they were a thing.
What are your thoughts on the? I know we're getting way off, but just real quickly, like in one sentence, what are your thoughts on the Rob Zombie versus John Carpenter Halloween?
Let's see, one sentence. Well. Three words, apples and oranges. And I want to like the Rob Zombie movie because stylistically he does some interesting things, but I didn't like the Rob Zombie. I have both of them on Blu-ray, I think, and I don't like either movie. Except there's one in the beginning of the first Halloween, the Rob Zombie Halloween, They play Kiss, God of Thunder, in the most effective way I've ever heard a Kiss song being portrayed. The opening of the song God of Thunder, with the little kid and everything, is great. It's just, you know, maybe it's just nostalgia factor there, too.
Maybe.
Yeah. What do you think?
I actually liked it. I thought it was a really effective update. But it's not rewatchable. And I think the John Carpenter original one, I think that's sort of imminently rewatchable.
Yeah. And again, they're different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Rob Zombie, like, just delved deeply into the psyche of Michael Myers, and John Carpenter, the monster didn't even really have a name.
Right. I mean,
he was just the shape. And Malcolm McDowell is definitely not Donald Pleasance.
No.
But, you know, Danny Trejo's in the Rob Zombie thing. And actually, you know, I mean, again, I think I like the idea of Rob Zombie better than I like any of his movies.
Yeah, I can see that.
And there's some dark, dark stuff. And he's been on the, because Chris Hardwick is actually in, is it House of a Thousand Corpses? Yeah. Chris Hardwick is in that movie. And so Rob Zombie's been on Chris Hardwick's, The Nerdist podcast. And he's a very articulate, smart guy. He just is, you know, he's got a definite style of movie making.
Yeah, I've only seen Halloween.
You haven't seen Devil's Rejects or House of a Thousand Corpses?
I have not.
I would actually recommend both of those movies, but the Devil's Rejects I thought was great in this very, very uncomfortable. Do you remember the character from Three's Company, Terry, that moved in? Like, I think she was the last of the roommates. She was the nurse.
No. Yep. I do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She is a victim in Devil's Rejects, and it's very, very uncomfortable. Just because that's the only association I have with her is with Three's Company. And you don't want that kind of stuff to happen to any of, you know, Jack's roommates.
Okay. Well, I'll have to check it out sometime.
Plus, Sid Haig is in both those movies, and also he's popped up in every Rob Zombie movie. In somewhere or another. And he's a great storyteller, too. Because he's been in all those schlocky horror movies from, like, back in the 60s.
He's a creepy-looking dude.
He is a creepy-looking dude. And he seems to enjoy that. I mean, he'll go to the horror conventions, you know, and just be Sid Haig, which is pretty great, really, if you can pull it off. So, anything else for Night Watch or Russian folklore or...
No, I really liked it. I didn't understand all of it, but it was really interesting to watch, and it moved along quickly, and it was really creative. So yeah. I appreciated this movie, even on a second viewing.
Yeah, me too. I can't say enough good stuff about this. It makes me sad that I might have to actually watch Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, but... Maybe there's more to it. Maybe the author, too. If I remember the articles I read, I think the author who wrote Night Watch and those series, he's written like 60 books.
Wow.
In Russian. He's like the Russian Stephen King or Dean Koontz or whatever. So he's a popular author.
That would explain some of the problems with the ending of the movie.
It would, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And also the rich character development.
Very true.
Yeah. So, anything else?
Yes. Anakin.
Okay.
You and Jason did a podcast about All the President's Men.
Yes.
And you had a long discussion about the state of journalism. And that made me wonder, have you ever seen a movie called Shattered Glass?
I have. I have indeed. I love that movie.
That is a great movie.
I love that story. In fact...
Yeah, it's such an effective demonstration of how somebody can sort of subvert the rules of journalism
so severely and get away with it for a while.
Well, there's a podcast connection, you know. Are you familiar with the Slate Political Gabfest?
I'm aware that it exists.
Well, the Slate Political Gabfest, the main host is David Plotz. And David Plotz's wife is Hannah Rosen. And she was played by Chloe Sevigny in that movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's... and there's a question about whether... what's his name? Stephen Glass?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He is actually trying to... you know, he is barred from journalism forever or whatever. He is trying to pass the bar in California, and they are refusing on moral grounds to give him a license to practice law.
He actually did pass the bar, right?
I think so, yeah. But they refused to give him his law, at least as of a year or so ago. They had still refused to give him a license and on moral grounds. And there was a question on the Slate Gabfest one day from Emily Bazelon, she's an attorney, but she's a journalist primarily, and she reports on the Supreme Court a lot. But she was talking about how, you know, her mixed feelings about whether or not he should be given a license to practice law. And, you know, whether, like, it's because it's been like 15 years since this whole thing happened, and he has apparently done as much as he could to somehow redeem himself. But, you know, how do you redeem yourself from something like that?
Right, yeah. I mean, it has such a breach of ethics. And, yeah, I don't know about all the laws of the California bar, but if I were to try and make an analogy to something I do know, I do have a professional license for engineering, and there's a pretty strong ethics component to that. The board, if they find you to be unethical, can certainly revoke your license, even if you didn't necessarily break any laws or put out any bad engineering. I can see how that would work.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think there's a question about whether they have the right to bar him. But whether they should is a different question. And I guess the question would be, okay, so if you were a member of another profession and you had an ethical violation that actually was in the news quite a bit, and then you went and studied engineering, and 10 years later you tried to get your certification, should they be able to hold your unethical practices in the past from another profession against you in this new profession many years later?
I say yes.
Yeah. You kind of have to.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it turns out that they rubber stamped him through and then he continues to commit, you know, unethical acts and pull down the reputation of the profession, you would be to blame as a member of the board or whatever.
Absolutely.
But at what price redemption? Can you ever be redeemed at this point?
You can always be a paralegal.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a question. It's like, is there forgiveness? Can you be absolved of your sins professionally? Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a complicated thing. So, yeah, no, I recommend Shattered Glass, absolutely. And actually, if you've read anything about the Jason Blair story, that's a whole nother thing. He's another guy, although he blames it on racism. Right? He was allowed. He blames the fact that he was allowed to basically make shit up because they gave him a pass because he was black, which is sort of it's an interesting way of justifying.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, his book is called "Burning Down My Master's House," so. He's steeped in it.
Nice.
Although, you know, hopefully he'll make enough money from books and he won't try to become an attorney. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, no, Shattered Glass. I highly recommend it. And you're right. Hayden Christensen plays Stephen Glass, right?
Yeah, probably the best thing I've ever seen him do.
Yeah, I agree. And even Chloe Sevigny actually does a great job and doesn't do anything that makes you uncomfortable. Unlike, say, Kids or The Brown Bunny.
I haven't seen either of those, but she was great on Big Love.
Yeah, she's great in most of what she does. She was actually great in Kids, and Brown Bunny was such a bad movie, I can't even suggest that. I mean, that, to me, that's the worst movie I have ever personally seen. But I would recommend avoiding that movie at all costs. And the fact that she actually performed oral sex for the movie, well, I guess if I was a teenager, that'd be a good reason to go watch the movie. Turns out it was not a good reason to watch this movie. It's horrible. Horrible movie. Vincent Gallo. Vincent Gallo, I feel sort of sad for Tommy Wiseau. I just feel hatred for Vincent Gallo because I don't think he's a very good person. Anyway.
All right, well, another one we can cross off the list.
Yeah.
People that should never be on your podcast.
No, that's okay. Yeah, Vincent Gallo, you can, I don't wish you any personal harm, but yeah, I don't ever want you on my podcast. I don't want you ever a movie in front of me that you've done. Horrible. Horrible person. What can you do? I'd rather have Roman Polanski on my podcast than Vincent Gallo. But, of course, he's a better director, so what can you do? Anything else? Oh, go ahead.
Speaking of horrible people, how about next week? Okay, I might blow your mind right here. What do you think? Maybe you've seen it. I'd be surprised. Frozen Ground.
Frozen Ground. Tell me a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes, of course. But what am I getting into? What is it? Oh,
Nicolas
wait.
Cage, John Cusack.
Yes. Yeah, we can do that. Absolutely.
Story of Robert Hansen.
Yeah, two of my coworkers are father and mother of the kid who plays John Cusack's son, Nicolas Cage's son. No, Nicolas Cage's son.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot, like, they got to meet Mr. Scent. Those guys spent a lot of time around the police station, and there were tons of extra work done by officers. Off the clock, of course, because, you know, they used uniforms and stuff. And actually, it turns out that the police department, I don't think they're portrayed all that well. I mean, as far as they were portrayed sort of like bumbling idiots, which may or may not be accurate.
Yeah, I was going to wonder if you were going to have any trepidation about watching a movie for that reason.
No, I don't care. It's just history. Yeah, no, I'd be happy to watch that movie. I think it's streaming, right?
It is. It's on Netflix.
Yeah. No, let's do it. That sounds great. I have Brick coming eventually, but yeah, let's do that.
I am really on the fence about whether I think it's going to be great or terrible, but I think it's going to be one of those things.
Yeah, I've heard I've heard it's not great, but it'll be interesting to see whether it's fun.
Right, so it'll be interesting since neither one of us have seen it.
Yeah. Well, and it'll give me an excuse to watch it because, you know, I've been meaning to. I mean, I certainly supported the movie because of all the people I knew that were in it. But yeah, it's, whether or not it's a good movie, it's a whole different deal.
I don't remember it ever being in theaters.
It was not in theaters in Anchorage. It was theater. They played it once in Wasilla.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So. Oh, excellent. We'll do that next week. So, any final thoughts? Any quotes? Any words of wisdom?
Come out of the gloom.
I think we can all agree with that. Okay, till next week.
You've been listening to Not in a Creepy Way. If you have a rant or rave, please send your email to rants@notincreepyway.com.
Like us on Facebook. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a comment. Turns out you can leave a 5-star rating and the comment could say your show sucks. And it still makes us happy.
Not in a Creepy Way.